Good evening, everyone. I want to welcome you tonight to our teleclinic on neuropathies. As the word implies, neuro meaning nerve, apathy meaning disease or damage. I want to start off by saying that there are over 100 known types of neuropathies in general, and they can occur in almost any tissue of the body, depending on the nerve involvement, the cause of the nerve involvement. You can get different symptoms in different parts of the body. About 30% of all the cases of neuropathy are classified as peripheral neuropathy, and these are usually linked to diabetes. And with the new research that Shackley has been doing on vitamin D and the connection with side effects from diabetes and from insulin resistance, we're now understanding that vitamin D may be a very important component in the equation for helping to protect against neuropathies. The types of neuropathies vary from what I see in my office on a regular basis. It includes things such as autonomic neuropathy, which is that part of the nervous system that does things involuntarily. There are cancer-related neuropathies, the damage from the chemotherapy or radiation. There are what we call compressive neuropathies, where there can be spinal cord injuries that cause pressure on the nerve. And then, of course, we're going to talk quite a bit about the diabetic side, the diabetic peripheral neuropathy, where the nerve itself becomes poisoned by the inappropriate use of glucose. There are a number of drug-induced and toxic neuropathies, along with gastrointestinal and nutrition-related neuropathies. We are even understanding that there are some hereditary neuropathies that may be involved in some genetic weaknesses, either at the liver, the cytochrome system for detoxifying chemicals, as well as the accumulation of byproducts of metabolism in fatty tissues. And as you know, nerves are more than one-third fat, and fatty acids and cholesterol and lecithin. And so a lot of times the toxic substances will seek out and be absorbed into these tissues, and we find it very difficult to reduce them. There's also an immune-related type of neuropathy grouping. There are infectious disease neuropathies, different diseases like leprosy. The infectious agent Mycobacterium leprae causes a numbing of the peripheral ends of the joints, fingers, toes, nose, and these begin to degenerate, but there's no pain. And then last of all, we're going to talk about neuropathic pain in people with neuropathies. We want to first talk about the peripheral neuropathies because these occur as we age. We know that the Schwann cells that are involved in protecting the nerve from crosstalk, kind of like insulin prevents electric wires from touching so that you get a spark between them. Nerves conduct electrical signals, and so we have to have insulation around those nerves. And Schwann cells are the cells that are directly involved in making this material we call myelin. And myelin is the insulation which covers approximately one half of all the nerves in our body. Now, these little Schwann cells are very sensitive. They are like the canaries of the body. If there is anything in the neighborhood that can become irritating or damaging, the Schwann cells begin to become ill and degenerate. And there is a disease called multiple sclerosis, which actually is a damage to the Schwann cell itself. So the Schwann cells can be affected by accumulation of toxic compounds. And this is probably the single most common cause of otherwise healthy people slowly losing the sensitivity in the tips of their fingers and slowly losing the sensitivity in their toes and in their feet so that when they walk, they don't feel real sure of themselves. And when they pick up small objects like the Optiflora pearl, that's the hardest thing in the world to grasp. So it becomes a progressive problem with most people as they tend to grow older. We can have metabolic injury to these cells, and there is a class of nutrients in the nerve called axoplasmic nutrients. Now, the axo means the part of the nerve called the axon, and the axon is where the stimulus, the signal for the nerve, actually is generated. And if there is a deficiency of those, we can have a long-term and long-lasting and developmental problem. And, of course, those nutrients include all of the B vitamins, magnesium, potassium, and a whole class of protein-derived molecules that we call neurotransmitters. So the degeneration that can occur in the nerve itself can be due to malnutrition. And peripheral neuropathies in the aging population are seen to be stabilized and sometimes even reduced by using such things as Vivix and B-complex and vitamin C and vitamin D. So we're really excited about this. There is also a type of peripheral neuropathy that's seen in people who have anemia. So if your iron level or your folic acid level is low, or B12, you may actually have a B vitamin deficiency. B12, by the way, is almost always recommended for elderly people. That means when, yeah, you're old enough to vote, but you're not old enough to do all the things you wanted to do, then you may be in the need of extra B12. And medical doctors have even been giving patients vitamin B12 shots when they begin to show a low iron level or low red blood count or even a large volume to their red blood cells. The MCV is a direct indicator of B12. And B12 and neuropathies in elderly people go hand in hand. So these are some nutrients we look at in general. Now, there is a type of peripheral neuropathy which can come from injury to the nerve. You can actually have the Schwann cell itself become damaged from trauma. And we are seeing that people who have been involved in very physical sports, including football and basketball and contact sports, or who have tried to jump the Grand Canyon on motorcycles and things of that sort, end up with damage to the spinal nerves, and the Schwann cells become damaged and irritated. What comes before this is the injury causes inflammation, and apparently Schwann cells that make this myelin are very sensitive to inflammatory processes in their vicinity, and they begin to slow down their activity. People who are under heavy stress quite often will show some peripheral neuropathy because there appears to be a reduction in the anti-inflammatory hormones made in the adrenal gland. These cortical hormones we call cortisone. Cortisone is made from cortisol. And when we are under stress, we will see that cortisol levels will climb very, very high. But because of the stress and because of the condition of the person, they're not able to convert cortisol into cortisone. Cortisone is released usually when we are resting. After we have worked hard during the day and we are well fed and well nourished and we lie down to sleep, at night that cortisol is converted into cortisone and the healing takes place. But when we're under stress or when we have pain and inflammation, we do not sleep well. And that's one of the cardinal signs in people who end up having long motor nerve irritations that can lead to neuropathy. There is a little interesting connection between nerve and the muscle in people that have motor nerve involvement. As I said, you can have irritation and damage to almost any nerve in the body, but proprioceptive nerves, those nerves that are involved in feeling and noticing where our toes and fingers are, that's one type of nerve. But there is another type of nerve called a motor nerve, and that is a nerve that is activated by spinal cord or brain action that causes that muscle to contract. You do not have to think when something like a baseball or a bird is flying towards your face. You instinctively bring your hand up in order to protect yourself. That is an autonomic reflex that is learned at a very, very young age. And yet people who have conditions like myasthenia gravis and other diseases develop myopathies in the muscle because the nerve is not connecting and actually extending the signal to that muscle properly. Polio is one condition that does this, and even certain adrenal and thyroid problems can actually lead to a neuromuscular problem, and that can lead to a neuropathy also. Now, there are some other very interesting things that show up in people who have trauma in their past. And if you were one of those people that love to jump over perfectly good ditches with your horse or with your motorcycle, you can end up with an ischemia from the trauma and as a product of the inflammation that won't show up for 20, 30, 40, or even 50 years later. We have had a few patients that when they begin to approach the age 50, they start showing some peripheral nerve irritation that is tracked back to the central nervous system in the spinal cord, and we call this a myositis. It is actually an irritation within the filaments of the nerve themselves, and it leads to the inability to sense where their toes are at, climbing stairs or walking across a carpet, such things as peripheral nerve damage in Parkinson's disease, where they lose that sensitivity. It's a central nervous system problem that is actually affecting their inability to feel exactly what's going on out there in the long distance from the brain. There can be either what we classify as upper or lower motor neuron disorders, meaning those that are in the brain and upper spinal cord, or those that are down in the lower part of the spine. And those have to be differentiated by a chiropractor or someone who is trained in the biodynamics of the spinal cord and how it's functioning. Now, neurologists will quite often do examinations to identify where this problem is, but usually a CT scan or an MRI is needed to really identify what the cause may be. Some people can end up with lesions, we call them, like little cysts that can form in or around the nerve, and that can be enough to cause a pressure type of neuropathy. I've seen people who start out with things like little muscle twitches and little spastic reaction, and they notice there's kind of a tremor. Their hands shake a little bit when they're reaching for it. These can be some of the early signs of a spinal cord irritation. And again, when it is caught early enough, the medical approach is to use corticosteroids to resolve the inflammation. We know that people even with MS, which is not in its true sense a neuropathy, but in reality it does fit into that category, they many times will be put on steroids. And we find that any illness that responds to steroids is usually an inflammatory type of condition because the prednisone and the other synthetic forms of cortisone lower the inflammation, and that greatly reduces the pressure, which makes the person feel like they're healthy. They feel great. They can walk. They can sense things. And yet, if they don't get their body into a mode where it's making its own corticosteroids, the problem returns. And we've seen this with a number of cases. We've had people that have had some pretty serious accidents. Auto accidents when they were young teenagers, wrestling accidents, even a few cases of people who have had what were called familial tremors since they were babies because of traumatic birth. And when they are evaluated, it's found out that there's actually little lesions that form in the brain when there has been early trauma. And the way doctors used to deliver babies with forceps was questioned and several very in-depth studies done through the Mayo Clinic, and they found out that at least one-third of babies who were delivered using forceps, Bill Cosby calls them the salad tongs, you know, they received trauma, a third of the children, and they would have little problems with torticollis, nerves where the muscle was tight on one side of their neck, or they were unable to turn their head for months and months after that injury, and later on in life, they tended to produce more dysfunction. Dr. Harrington, who was the developer of the Harrington rods for scoliosis, actually says that birth trauma was one of the greatest single incidences that tended to cause scoliosis later on in life. And in reality, that is kind of a motor neuropathic problem. And so doctors are more reluctant to use that type of delivery, the forceps. They instead would rather do a C-section than have a woman go through the stress. I guess you'd say it has reduced a lot of the birth-related neuropathies. But after we get on our tricycles and our automobiles and our horses, we seem to do more trauma later on in life anyway. The lack of oxygen to the nervous system is believed to be a cause of a lot of central nervous system neuropathies. And actually what shows is that the brain itself begins to shrink. And according to the Merck manual, at least 10% of the cases of progressive muscular atrophy, where a person's muscles begin to shrink up, has to do with lack of oxygen to the brain. And some of that can be a genetic weakness that doesn't show up until we're in our 70s or 80s, but it is a very interesting observation. So a lot of times people who have very low oxygen tension in their blood because of genetic weaknesses, they tend to do better when they are put on an aerobic program. You know that one of the new research studies that came out was taking a Parkinson's person and putting them on a resistance bicycle and doing progressive workouts. And they found, and this was at the Cleveland Clinic, and you can go online and look this up, the Cleveland Clinic started putting their Parkinson's patients on a very progressive resistant exercise program, and lo and behold, it reduced their need for medication, and in many cases, their neuropathy began to disappear. And so this has been going on for the last couple of years, and I have a number of patients that are doing their home exercise, but you have to push it. It cannot be kind of an easy-going bike ride. It has to be 30 minutes of pretty strenuous workout in order to stimulate the brain and get the neurons to connect and be able to overcome a lot of the stresses that's gone on. That's an interesting topic in itself. Just stimulating the brain with more oxygen and blood flow by physical exercise seems to have a dramatic effect on peripheral neuropathy. I've had patients with post-polio syndrome, and it can be very progressive, and they actually can end up not only with weakness up to 15 to 30 years later, but they can end up with pain in the muscle itself. And, of course, polio is due to a virus. Back in the 1950s and 60s, when all of us were getting the little sugar cube with the vaccine on it, the two developers, Dr. Salk and Dr. Sabin, had independently developed two different anti-polio vaccines, and both of them testified that the other one's product wasn't good. If you look at the historical problem, you know, President Roosevelt developed polio, a late-stage onset, and so it became really a national thing to talk about it. But what had happened in the 30s and 40s, we saw a peak in polio, and it began to decrease to about one-half of the incidence by the time the polio vaccine was developed. So some doctors who believe that some of these, quote, pandemic type of infections go in cycles and waves, like the Black Plague of Europe. I mean, it died out after a while, and a lot of it had to do with common sense things of getting rid of the rat, protecting fleas from accumulating in your household. But what has happened is we've carried a resistance against the Black Death and a plague in our European genes ever since. So we've got a permanent resistance. So it's thought that there may be some of that going on even with the infectious types of neuropathies. Now, I made a few little notes here, and I just want to say that we could probably spend a whole weekend on a seminar talking about neuropathies, but I wanted to talk a little bit more about diabetic neuropathy, because this is a real serious problem. What happens is when we expose ourselves to carbohydrates are used as building blocks for many, many compounds in the body and for making fuel. And in order for us to use glucose in the cell, except muscle cells when they're under exercise, interestingly, we need to have insulin that is being recognized and utilized by the cell. So the cell has some special little spots on the cell membrane called insulin receptors. These insulin receptors are kind of like little doors that open and close to allow insulin to come into the cell itself. These receptors are kind of like a lock, and insulin is like the key, and you twist the lock and the door opens and then insulin goes in. But what researchers have found, and most recently Shackley has found, is that there is also a vitamin D receptor, D as in David, sitting on that site, which activates a gene which allows the cell to be more sensitive to insulin. And we are just now understanding that approximately 10% of all of the genes in our chromosomes, there's about at least 20,000 and probably closer to 23,000 different genes. Those genes, 10% of them, have to have vitamin D in order to function. So if a cell needs to do some repair because of injury, trauma, inflammation, irritation, in order to activate the insulin receptor site so the cell can make energy, we have to have vitamin D present. And some of those receptor sites also require vitamin K and vitamin A in order to become activated also. So the problem gets to be pretty intense when we have multiple nutrient deficiencies that slowly drag us down over a period of many years. Diabetics tend to be classified as brittle diabetics. These are the type 2 diabetics that can control their blood sugar by dieting and by exercise, but we're finding that the number of these people has been growing geometrically to the point that by the year 2020, which is when we're going to be in the middle of the baby boomer retirement age, half of the baby boomers would have type 2 diabetes or insulin resistance. I prefer to use the word insulin resistance if you do not need insulin. And so that accounts for most people who are classified with type 2 diabetes really can get over it if they're very conscientious about their diet, if they help to improve their lean muscle mass. By reducing fat, you are reducing the tissue that can absorb insulin and keep it away from the sites where it needs to be. Fat is a reservoir of not only hormones, but xenohormones, chemicals that can actually interact with those receptors improperly too. So diabetic neuropathy is getting to be a more serious problem than ever before. One very good study published just in the last couple of years, I think 2007, looked at elderly people with diabetic neuropathy. These were people between the ages of 55 and 85. And they found out that those that had peripheral neuropathy, and including pain, a lot of diabetic neuropathy patients have pain in their legs and feet. When they gave them vitamin D that raised their blood levels above 70 nanograms per milliliter, they found out that when 3 months, 40% of the people noticed reduction in pain. After 6 months, they saw almost two-thirds of the people reported a reduction in pain, and after a year, everyone, now that you don't hear very often in the scientific literature, everyone on the study, which was about 85 people, all of them noted improvement in their neuropathy. After a year, almost half of the people said they had little or no pain whatsoever. So we think that vitamin D may be a real key to reducing peripheral neuropathy and in helping type 2 diabetics or the insulin-resistant type of diabetics from showing up. Now, in the blood profile that we do with the Build a Better You, this is the one that's been going on since 1979, we've tested over 40,000 Shackley people. We are now including in that profile an automatic insulin resistance calculation. So it will say based upon your LDL cholesterol, based upon the LDL particle size, based upon your fasting glucose level, and your A1C glycosylated hemoglobin level, we can determine what your extent of insulin sensitivity or desensitivity really is. And vitamin D seems to be the single most important factor we've run into. Now, for those of you who are using the glucose regulation complex, that is a vital thing to help getting the insulin receptor sites repaired. Insulin receptor sites on the gene can actually undergo damage, and the bacopa herb that is in the glucose regulation complex, I have been recommending now for years, and it has some amazing regenerative properties for the nerve themselves. So vitamin D and the glucose regulation complex is what I highly recommend for people with diabetic type retinopathy. You may say, well, I'm not a diabetic and I've got neuropathy. I say, tell me what your insulin resistance score is. Let me know what your vitamin D level is. And you may be suffering from an early stage of insulin resistance that is showing up first as neuropathy in your legs and feet and hands. So don't wait until you cross over the line and you are having severe high blood glucose levels. If you are just having apparent frequent elevation in your blood sugar, you could be developing some peripheral neuropathy if you're, you know, over the 55 point. After 55, we seem to need nutrients in greater quantities than before. And some of you may not have caught this in the 2007 landmark study that Shackley did on the Vitalizer, but they determined from that mature adults over the age of 55 need 8 essential nutrients in higher concentrations than they ever had. So as we get older, we do not have a decrease in nutrient needs. In some areas, we actually need more, and one of them is vitamin D. Well, when people come to me with a problem and says, well, I'm not a diabetic, and I have back pain, and I have a history of injuries, what can I do about it? There's a wonderful technique that even Dr. Shackley used in his chiropractic practice, and that was decompression. You know, back in the 30s and 20s, chiropractors were experimenting with gentle ways of relaxing the tension in the spine so the adjustment would hold better. And one of the ways was to do traction. Gentle intermittent traction has an amazing effect on reducing the stress, the pressure stress on nerves, which reduces inflammation. And I have a little decompression device I have at home, a little backswing. It looks like a lawn chair that you lie down on, and it inverts so that my head actually goes down and my feet go upward, and I don't go straight up and down. You only need to go about 45 degrees. But the amount of decompression that has given me relief is just phenomenal. So decompressing the spine as we get older through chiropractic adjustments or through our own home traction techniques, relaxing, stretching, yoga, has a dramatic effect on the function of the nerves. And if you're giving them the nutrients they need and you're avoiding the poisons that you don't need, there can be amazing recoveries. And we're hearing patients who have followed all the recommendations, all the advice until Vivix came out. And when Vivix came out, they noticed a new plateau of improvement. So I think that we're getting more targeted type of nutrients that are going to benefit us that are aging. And I'm looking forward to Shackley coming out with even greater things. I guess that's one of the neat things about being a scientist, is that you always are anticipating new and better things. And Shackley has never disappointed me in the last, 37 years that we've been using the products. They are on the cutting edge, and you can trust those things to be of help. Okay, I'm going to open the line. Then if you have a question, please hit *6 on your keyboard. Ask the question, then hit *6 again so you can back out. Because we hear every sound in your room, your dog barking outside and somebody slamming the door. *6, who will be first?
Hi.
Yes, ma'am, go ahead.
You were talking about the study in which in 1 year every patient experienced improvement. What was the vitamin? E as in Edward or D as in David?
D as in David, yes.
Mm-hmm. D as in David, okay.
Yes, and the presentation that we did on vitamin D, Your Time Has Come, talks more in depth about that study, but it particularly is related to diabetic neuropathy. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and when you do archive this call, would you check it for volume? Because your volume has been very low today.
Yes, that will be done. Karen does the post-presentation editing, and we will get it up to snuff. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Okay, someone else, question or comment?
Hey there.
Yes, yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
I was wondering if you could please tell me the effects that alcohol has on neuropathy.
Oh, wow. That's a wonderful question. Ethyl alcohol, or the kind that you find in alcoholic beverages, is actually a neurotoxin. It is a central nervous system depressant. And what the way it works is, it is a fast-burning carbohydrate that does not require insulin. The nerves actually use up the oxygen in the tissue whenever alcohol is consumed. It's that lackadaisical feeling that people get when they're undergoing inebriation. But there's a second problem with alcohol, and that is that the cells convert alcohol into a byproduct called acetaldehyde. Acetaldehyde is what we have in slug bait. It is a snail killer. And beer is used because of the fermentation process. It's used for catching snails. You can put a little cup in the ground with beer in it, and the next morning it'll be full of drowned and intoxicated slugs. And it's the acetaldehyde that is produced that is the poison that actually causes nerve damage. Now, all of us produce a little bit of alcohol, ethyl alcohol, in our digestive tract by carbohydrate fermentation. And if you've ever had indigestion or bloating or you have passed wind, then you are making some ethyl alcohol from your fruits and grains and vegetables. And the body has a method of detoxifying that in the liver through the cytochrome system. And if that is overloaded by having recreational alcohol, drinking pure alcohol, it goes right to the brain before it gets a chance to go to the liver. And so there is enough studies that have been tallied on alcohol that, to tell you the honest truth, there is no safe level of consuming alcohol. And I know all the studies that are talking about the French connection and alcohol, but we're now finding out that with Vivex, it has nothing to do with the alcohol itself. It has everything to do with the antioxidants, resveratrol and polyphenols. So I am basically a teetotaler. I don't drink alcohol for recreation or for sport or relaxing. I don't find that as beneficial to me at all. And having some alcoholism in my past family background, I have been warned by my grandmother, as some of you have heard me say, never start drinking alcohol because this family can't handle it. And so I am kind of down on alcohol. Okay, question or comment there, ma'am?
That was perfect.
Hello.
Thank you.
Hello.
Okay, go ahead. Yes.
Yes, I have a question in reference to neuropathy. I have 5 bulging discs, and I also am diabetic. Mm-hmm. I've gone through the foot doctors, and they told me that my neuropathy is not from the diabetes because I don't have the pain with my feet constantly. It comes
right
and goes. Now, they didn't say anything about surgery, but that's where they're heading for. Right now, I go exercising, and I belong to a club, and I entered myself now into a challenge. And I am finding that since I, like you said, you exercise, you have to exercise through it, and it should be less painful. Well, this is my second week into the challenge, and I will say that I'm finding that as I'm doing it more and more and challenging myself, and doing this 4 times a week, an hour a day, that, yes, I'm seeing the change in my body.
Uh-huh.
So I'm wondering, you know, how does the back injury entangle with with the neuropathy?
Uh-huh. We started mentioning that there are neuropathies that are due to pressure neuropathies, and you are a perfect example of that. Whenever you have bulging discs, you are going to have pressure being applied to either the spinal cord or the spinal nerves that emerge from the spinal canal. And that pressure, which is usually only less than a few ounces, is enough to cause inflammation. And the inflammation will cause a shutdown in the function of the nerve. Kind of like if you've ever fallen asleep and your arm is in an awkward position and you end up with your arm going to sleep, so to speak, that is actually due to the nerve being compressed either at the spinal level or near a joint, and all you do is move your arm in a different position and that will disappear. But the problem is that when you have it in the spinal canal with the bulging discs, you are at great risk of causing a lot of neurological dysfunction. And the neuropathy in your case may be proprioceptive, where you just don't, you know, you lose sensitivity and maybe some strength in the muscle, but the cause is still the same. Only one third of those muscles have anything to do with pain. And with diabetics, all of the nerves are irritated, so there is a pain component. I would suggest that you talk with your natural chiropractor about gentle traction. We call it decompression therapy now. And Dr. Shackley did that with his patients because people used to work so hard that they injured themselves on the farm. Now we're injuring ourselves in auto accidents and things when we were young that we pay for when we get older. Okay? Is that helpful?
Okay, thank you. Yes, thank
you
very much. So gentle decompression.
Yes, and you make sure your vitamin D level is up there in the 70s or 80s. Okay?
Okay.
And
that's another thing I wanted to ask. Thank you very much.
Okay. Question, anyone?
Hello, Dr. Brouse?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. How can I help you?
Hey, you mentioned you have people like with injuries from athletic, you know, being athletes, and you said you've treated them. My question is, how successful was your treatment? I guess it's a three-part question. How successful were you at treating them? Did you treat them chiropractically or with nutrition or both? And if it was with nutrition, what kind of supplements did you use?
Right. Well, yeah, as a chiropractor, I see a lot of structural and spinal injuries, more when I was younger because I've gotten away from so much of the heavy adjusting. But the protocol is a combination of both nutrition, which is chiropractic, you know. That is something we've used since day one. E. Palmer recommended that we have an optimum diet before the word vitamin was even coined, and that's why Dr. Shackley got into it as a chiropractor. He realized patients needed some boost. But my point is that the protocol is to reduce the mechanical stresses on the spine. Exercise does a wonderful job. And then secondarily, optimize the nutrients that you find to be deficient when you do testing. And that's why we do nutritional profile to find out, you know, does the person need more iron? Do they need more antioxidants? Are they protein deficient? Are they losing the connective tissue that the joints contain and the cartilage, the discs? And when that's happening, you have to support the tissue that has undergone the most degeneration first, or the body just continues to degenerate. I don't have a protocol for everyone because everyone's case is different. I've had high school baseball pitchers who end up with neuropathy because they have developed what you would call a pinched nerve in their neck. And you find the cause, you treat it, and the neuropathy goes away. And I've got 75-year-olds that have it from an auto accident when they were in their 20s and 30s, and that's much more difficult to treat. I use modalities such as ultrasound, I use sine wave, and I use electroacupuncture for these people. And quite often you have to use a whole cadre of little things in order to begin to get the body to heal itself. And the nutrition is, I would say, the limiting factor in everyone's recovery. So when a person says, oh yeah, I've tried my chiropractor and he helped me as much as he could and said I can't do any more, then you need to boost up the nutrition because that's usually the limiting factor in any recovery. I've made a statement before and I'll stand behind it, and that is that if your nutrition is not optimum, there is no way that you can be optimally healthy under any care from any doctor. Doctors don't heal people. Nature does, and nutrition is the building blocks for all of this. So my protocols are dependent upon what I find with the patient. I usually see people who have had chronic neuropathies. I wish I could say I have 100%, but no one does. And following up with people is sometimes a problem. But of those people who have followed the home exercise protocol, the sleeping, sometimes the mattress can be a problem. And getting them to where they can actually rest at night and then optimize their nutrients, I would say that it is definitely better than 50%. And I don't think that there's anyone who could even claim close to 100. I certainly don't. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Is that helpful?
I appreciate it. Yes.
Yeah, my book talks about that a bit, and I go into the list of supplements that most people are deficient in. But now that we have Vivex and the Vitalizer and the vitamin D, I'm seeing a whole new wave of people that did not respond 10 years ago that are now starting to respond with the advances that we're making in nutrition. Okay?
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Okay, anyone else?
I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
When you were talking about the study that was done with the vitamin D,
right?
How much vitamin D should a person with diabetic neuropathy take?
Good question. And as Shackley scientists are finding out and reporting, you have to take enough based upon the following criteria. And this is right from the research. Number one, the body type. If a person has central obesity, they are going to need anywhere from 1.5 to 5 times the amount of vitamin D that someone who does not have central obesity. You know what I mean by that? Their belt is more than 40 inches for a man and 35 inches for a woman at the waist. Then that is the beginning of central obesity, and you're going to need more vitamin D than you normally would if you were normal weight. If you're an ectomorph, meaning a body mass index of less than 15, you probably are just going to need the straight amount that is mentioned on the Shackley Vitamin Dology chart. But any of us that have, you know, lifted weights, build up body masses that were bigger than we really should have when we were young, now we have to maintain those when we get older. The second thing is age. A person who is over the age of 50 could require anywhere from 400 to 1,000 international units than they normally would for every decade over the age of 50, because we have more need for vitamin D. Skin tone. If you are a naturally fair-complected person, you're not going to probably need as much vitamin D unless you live in a temperate area. You know, the northern climates above 37 degrees, which is Los Angeles, you cannot get enough vitamin D from the sun, no matter how much time you spend outside. So all of my Colorado skiers that have these beautiful tans, skiing even in the winter with T-shirts and short sleeves, because the weather is so gorgeous, they make zero vitamin D because the sun is too low. And then, of course, you want to measure the blood level. You've got to find out the result of the amount that you're taking or the amount that you're making from the sun by measuring your blood level 4 times in 1 year, spring, fall, winter, and summer. And those values will tell you how much you're going to have to change your dosage during the year to accommodate for what you cannot get from even your great activity outside. Now, I've just created, and my staff is reviewing it, and I'm having it looked at by a couple of doctors, a handout which is going to be downloadable from our website on vitamin D. How much supplemental vitamin D do you need? And it actually takes you through not a real complicated, but a step-by-step analysis of coming to the normal dosage that you may need. But the only way you can tell if it's working is to get your blood tested. There is no way to know. This is probably, according to Dr. John Collin, the president and director of the Vitamin D Council. He's a medical doctor in Washington and very, very active in this area. He said that this is probably the most complicated and important nutrient that we have ever discovered in modern times. And it is not easy for doctors to dose this because there are so many variables. So I hope my chart doesn't complicate it, but I think it's going to give people a better in-depth understanding of just how important it is to know what your daily intake is. And I would say it's anywhere from 1,000 to 10,000 IUs a day. Shackley, on the physician's website, just a month ago, made the statement that probably 10,000 units a day for an adult is not too much. And I would say that in many, many cases, if you're living north of 37 degrees latitude, that you're going to need to take enough to do the job? So that's a good question, and I don't think there's any doctor, including myself, or a scientist that would go out and say exactly how much you need today without knowing the answers to these questions that are on my little handout. So give it a little time, about another week, and you should be able to go to the healthedcorp.com website and download the little chart, how much supplemental vitamin D do you need. And Shackley's doing marvelous work in this area. I want to tell you that for those of us using Shackley, our life has been blessed and enriched beyond measure because of the absolute science that is behind every single product we've got. And other people compare their products with Shackley, and that isn't what Dr. Shackley said. He used to say, compare it with the way it is in nature, and don't compare Shackley with anyone else's or try to use Shackley as a standard. We are following nature, and nature is the standard, but it leaves the rest of the company so far behind when they try to duplicate the product without having done the research behind it, and that makes the difference. Okay, is that helpful?
Thank you.
Okay, we got time for a couple more questions.
I have a question.
Oh, yes, ma'am. There, go ahead.
I have peripheral neuropathy caused from chemotherapy. I was on a drug, a pharmaceutical, Neurontin, for it, and I got off that.
Yeah.
And I use lecithin and the Vivex,
good.
And I also
good.
Use some D, but probably not enough. But I was wondering, is that always permanent?
Well, no, it's not permanent. We see a lot of patients with post-chemotherapy neuropathies, and that's due to the toxicity to the nerve itself. That can improve. In many cases, the chemotherapist will say, you know, this is going to be temporary. It may take you a few months, but it'll usually come back. Well, after a year or two, if it doesn't come back, then you have to go to a different level of nutrition. It sounds like your formula, lecithin, definitely important for helping that recovery. Also the vitamin D, and now the Vivex post-chemotherapy neuropathy, we're really getting some good feedback on. Okay?
Okay.
Yeah.
Another thing that I had a question about, and I do have some pain occasionally from this, but I'm working on improving my core muscles. I also herniated a disc.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, and it was after radiation. I had radiation in the pelvic area following the chemo,
yep.
And they said it dried out the disc, and I herniated
yep.
a disc. That was in July. So I'm doing really well. I'm doing Pilates now.
Good.
But I still do have a little bit of pain.
Well, yes, and I can tell you, you are on the right track. You have to give it a little time, but doing all the things you're doing should be very helpful for you. Check with your local healthy doctor, natural doctor, and get your vitamin D level tested, and do that on a regular
yes.
basis every 3 months until you find out exactly what it takes to maintain your level between that 75 and 125 range, and I think you'll see some great benefit. But you're on the right track. You're doing it right.
Okay, thank
okay.
you very much.
You're welcome.
Well.
Okay, time for one more call.
I have a question.
Oh, okay,
Hello.
Go ahead.
I have several issues, and you've talked about some of them. But basically, right now I'm suffering with neuropathy in my arm, where my hand goes to sleep at night. And I have difficulty trying to wake it up. I can sometimes take 20 minutes to wake it up. I hurt my neck back in 2001. I fell and I had a concussion and I hurt my neck and my back. But as I'm listening to you, I'm going way back. I had an injury at 18 and I had a car accident at 40. And it sounds like I fit into a lot of the things you're talking about. However, I have one kidney. I was born that way. So I don't have that adrenaline gland that you're talking about. And I do take Vivex, Vitalizer, vitamin D. I've been in Shackley for many years. But I have a lot of pain in my legs. I have a bursar on the back of my heel. My podiatrist won't operate because of my kidney and because I can't take anti-inflammatories. So I just wondered what you could suggest for me.
Number one, get to a good chiropractor.
I've been going to chiropractor for 7 years, yeah. And
well,
he does.
Well, is he getting results?
Yes, I've gotten some results from him.
Okay. Then I would say by combining the nutrition and some home exercise that you should be doing, is he giving you some home traction recommendations and things of that nature?
I've started going to a gym a couple of months ago, and I'm doing the elliptical now. I did 30 minutes. I did 2.5 miles. It is helping, but this bursar is just extremely painful on the back of my foot, and I don't know what to do about that. It started out with a couple of spurs on my Achilles tendon, and they told me to put a night splint on. So I wore the night splint for 6 weeks, and I ended up with this bursar, which is worse than what I had.
Exactly. Well, you should be soaking your feet, you know, in hot Epsom salts water, and you should be taking probably the pain relief complex with the boswellia, because that does work on bursa.
It does.
Yes, it does. And you may want to get some therapeutic massage from a sports massage therapist, someone who's trained in that, because there is some specific massage techniques. We have a full-time massage therapist on our staff, and he does magic with cases that I can't help.
Because I did go for sports massage therapy, and she was doing acupressure.
Yeah, that's part of it. Well, you may be right on track. I mean, you may be doing everything right. It's just going to take time. Remember that
a year.
Health is not it's a crock pot procedure, not a microwave. It takes some time when you're doing everything right to get that recovery. And it sounds like your old injuries and then your recent, you know, problems can be improved. Now, can you ever get it back to 100%? In some cases, not. But you don't need 100% to feel good and to be able to do more things. Now, have you ever had shingles?
No, but I have a lot of inflammation.
Post-herpatic trauma. If you've ever had chicken pox, there are people who will get neuropathy along a spinal nerve that emerges usually from the trunk somewhere in their upper chest or even in the lower part of their neck that runs into an area with excruciating pain. And so I didn't mention that, but that's a viral type of neuropathy.
I don't have that, but I have stenosis. And
we did a teleclinic on that back a couple months ago. But
thank you.
I think this should be of help. You folks are wonderful. I hope that this information is helpful, and I hope that you'll be able to show this with your friends. And we are going to be having our next teleclinic on tumor markers, February 28, what they mean and how they can be useful to your health. So I want to thank you very much for calling in, and good night.